When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
I'm not a betting guy, but for y'all that are, there's Bet Online. Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Bet Online has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. You've got the Belmont Stakes this weekend. There's no chance for a triple crown. Bob Baffert won't be there. They're still going to be running the race. The NBA playoffs are rolling, so there's all kinds of options for you. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And for everybody that's wondering about TD, hasn't been on the last few episodes. As you know, if you listen regularly, he's got his TDBA, Tony Delt Basketball Academy. He's coaching AAU boys and girls, multiple grades, and the summertime is really busy, slammed. So he's traveling and coaching and tournaments and the whole thing. So when things slow down, hopefully TD will be back on the podcast. We definitely enjoy his knowledge and his insight. It's been an honor for me to be able to co-host episodes of Believing Kentucky with him. So we definitely wish him all the best with all his kids, boys and girls, with all the tournaments and everything going on AAU-wise this summer. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Believe in Kentucky, Believe Podcast Network, number one podcast network for professionals. My name is Vinny Hardy here, coming to you this Thursday evening. Got another fun episode. We got a former Cat with us here, played for Cal. We're going to look into a little bit of last year, but of course, look forward to the positive fixes for the future. We got Todd Lancher in here with us this evening, man. Todd, appreciate you hopping on this episode, man. How you doing?
I'm great, man. Thank you for having me. It's a blessing to get back out here and talk a little basketball in the off season. So thank you for including me in the podcast, man.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Had to do it. And speaking of, you know, getting back and trying to do stuff, the squad has been doing some satellite camps. They were in Union. They were in Bardstown. Mm-hmm. What's it like out there getting with the kids and mingling and just kind of going throughout the state like that? You've been from Lexington, you know about it for sure.
Yeah, it was a blast. I mean, you know, I got to travel, you know, playing high school ball around the area, but you never get to see it in the way that you do through the lens of being a Wildcat and the way that those young guys, young players, boys and girls, look up to you. It gives you, you know, a real sense of pride that you're able to educate the, you know, the up and coming class below you, and just kind of pass along some of that knowledge that you may or may not have gotten in your own experience. I took some things that I learned, you know, growing up and learning from other guys. I remember going to camps with, you know, Saul Smith and Cameron Mills and those guys, and appreciating the way that they took their time and focused their energy on making it, you know, having a positive impact on those younger groups, and kind of put my own spin on it and use some of the things that they taught me, and you know, continue to pass along that knowledge. I think that that's where the growth of the game comes from. That's where a lot of the passion that young kids start to play with gets instilled in moments like that. So it's a real blessing to be in a position to be able to give back, and like I said, pass that knowledge along and continue to elevate the game.
That's it. You mentioned Cameron Mills. We had Cam on a few episodes back. You are a fellow Dunbar alum, just like Cam, Lexington native, just like Cam. Border number 21, you had a father that played for Kentucky, both of you guys, Terry Mills for Cameron, Bo Lanter for yourself. Man, a lot of similarities there for you guys, man.
Absolutely. Cam and I've got a pretty good relationship. I've been on his show a couple times in the past. We like to, poke at each other back and forth. The 21, the number 21 for me came because my dad wore number 12. And when I came in my first year, Ryan Harrell was wearing number 12. And they were just like, "How about 21?" I was like, "I don't care, man. Anything, whatever fits." And so it was just kind of ironic. I actually have a picture next to my bed of my dad making a dribble move in a game where you see 12 on his jersey, and then I'm making the exact same dribble move in the photo next to it with the 2-1. So it's kind of a little bit of a mirror image of each other. It's kind of cool. But to get that father-son experience, I remember growing up playing ball. Dad said, we'd go to games, and I'd be fascinated being in Rupp and seeing what those guys get to experience. And dad was always told me if he could take the experiences he got to live out and give them to me, he would. And truthfully, that wasn't something that I thought was going to pan out until the latter part of my teenage years, where the spot opened up and it was necessary for me to be on that roster. So it was truly a dream come true for me, much like Cam. Both being Dunbar kids, he had a little bit more of a high school impact than I did, as did Collier, his brother. But nonetheless, both Dunbar grads, as well as EJ Floreal, who was a walk-on with us in a couple of my years, whose dad was the track coach. So we got to give back a little bit to Dunbar, give some recognition to the school, and then again, live out the dream that every Kentucky boy that picks up a ball wants to do, put on that blue and white jersey.
Absolutely. Now, I'm a little bit older than you, but I'm not old enough to remember when your dad was there. I was probably a little kid, 2 or 3, if I looked at it right, when he was there at Kentucky. I was a toddler. Oh, your guys' journey is similar. I think I was like 3 or 4 in 81 when he was there. But both of you guys transferred in from other schools to Kentucky. Him from Midwestern State, you from Gulf State College. Well, that was, kind of ironic too that both of you guys went somewhere else and then worked your way back to Kentucky.
Absolutely. And it goes a little deeper than that, actually, for our situation, because both the teams prior to our joining won a title, and both of us were preseason number ones to repeat, and both fell short. So I was actually a preseason, well, not me personally, but our teams when I was there from 12 through 15 were all preseason number one picks to win the title, number one team overall, number one recruiting class. In 2013, it was Nerlens Noel and Archie Goodwin. Ryan Harrow, 2014 was the twins, Arendur and Aaron Harrison. We had, Alex Poitras and Willie Cauley-Stein and those guys. And then my senior year, we had Tyler Ulis, Devin Booker, Trey Lyles, Marcus Lee's in there. Just, a plethora of guys that were, leaps and bounds above much of the competition. College basketball comes down a lot to experience. So, both for dad and I, we were, he had Sam Bowie. He had some of those big names that you might remember, that we should have had a couple rings, but both of us fell short. But yeah, the first year for me out of high school, I wasn't very highly recruited. I was actually going to hang it up and just go to UK as a regular student, and I decided I didn't work that hard and put that much time and effort in to try to get my education paid for, to just hang it up. So I took the junior college route. My dad's senior year of high school, most of it was canceled due to snow. They had a bunch of snow days, and his senior year, he was being recruited for Kentucky. And when in those days, back in the 80s, when your name stopped showing up in the paper, you can't, nobody knows why. And it stopped showing up because their games were canceled for snowstorms. It's not like it is today, where you can still find out information and get information out there. If you're not in the paper, nobody knows. It's just because you're not putting numbers up, as far as anybody's concerned. So he had a little bit of a similar route. Went to Texas and played well, and I went to junior college and played well, and the stars just kind of aligned for both of us to bring us back home and give us that chance, both coming off of national titles. So, you know, it was very unique, and God willing that those doors opened for me. And I, you know, I pretty much had to decide, much like he did I want to hang it up, and, you know, never play another significant minute, pretty much, for the opportunity to do my part to improve what had the potential to be a championship team. You know, but would sacrifice a lot of the glory that you might get at a smaller school if you went and actually got to be the guy that was, you know, had the ball in his hand. Both of us made that sacrifice and, you know, made the decision to try to be the best version of ourselves as players. So it's very cool. It wasn't planned that way at all. In fact, we didn't realize it until we kind of stopped and looked back, you know, along my journey, but, you know, it was an absolute blessing in disguise the way things worked out for both of us.
Absolutely. According to BigBlueHistory.net, he was 6'1", 175. You're listed 6'2", 190. Similar size. You got a little, you know, 15 pounds of muscle on him. So if both of you guys are 18, 19, 20 years old, I assume
you already know the answer to where you're going with this. You already know the answer.
He stick to his guns. You stick to your guns. I'm sure both of y'all, neither one of y'all are backing down on who would get the better of it.
So I'll give you this. I've heard, you know, war stories about how good of a shooter he was. But there was no three-pointer back then. So he was doing pretty well, putting up some numbers in high school with no three-pointer. He always said if there was a three-point line back when he played that they'd have to put his arm in a sling. which I think is pretty funny. He told me a story about Joe B. Hall telling him one time when he put him in at the end of the game, he was like, "Bo, don't shoot, like dribble the clock out." And he was like, "It took me 7 seconds to get it up." So I share that trait with him. But the game was a little different back then. I was asked to put on, I put on weight on my own before coming back. You know, just to be able to compete with the athleticism that is today's game. It's not what it used to be. It was a little bit more, you know, slow paced finesse, you know, not to step on anybody's toes that are, you know, the older generation, but today's a lot more of a bruiser, muscle. They didn't lift as much. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. So for the role I was asked to play with Kentucky, I put on 25 pounds, coming from junior college to Kentucky. So that 190 was actually during preseason when they weighed us in. I ended up starting the season at 212.
Wow, okay.
But I was being asked to guard Alex Poitras at 235. So I was still the little guy down there. But you know, I was being asked to. I remember Cal pulling me aside and he was like, "Look, he might not like you when practice is over, but your job is to make him better. And I don't care what that takes. Foul him, push him, shove him, piss him off. But get him better, because that's nobody's going to give him a break when he's out there." So that's, I took that role to heart, and we butted heads for a long time, but that's my brother now. We were in the trenches together, and we have a lot of respect for each other. But you know, I knew the role I was taking. I'm not going to get the glory for it, but I like to think that maybe some of those hacks in practice taught him how to play through some of those fouls and make some of those plays that he was capable of making for us.
Definitely. Now, if we flip it to the in-state thing, you being from Kentucky, just tell us outsiders what it's like. We saw everything. We all know, you know how the fan base is.
Mm-hmm.
We all know how we feel when you play for Kentucky and you're from Kentucky. That just mm-hmm. puts extra emphasis. Dante Allen on the team now. You were there with Derek and Dom, mm-hmm. being in-state kids. Is it something that you guys visibly feel on your shoulders, that extra weight being in-state kids and everybody wanting you to do that much better just because of that?
Yeah. So it was, you know, I had admittedly a lot less pressure than some guys have, you know, just because of the role I was playing. I wasn't asked to, you know, I wasn't a starter. I wasn't asked to, you know, to step up in some of those situations in the spotlight, like a lot of those guys were. Derek was, Dom was in multiple situations. But I did, however, bring that unique perspective, to a lot of the guys that, you know, were coming in from out of state. I specifically recall, Julius Randle, who's, you know, made news as of late as the most improved player in the league this year. I remember him coming into summer workouts and kind of being a little wide-eyed, like, wow, it's like this, because it's not, you know, they have, you know, not to put down other schools in their areas, but people live and breathe basketball here. You know, you can watch a rivalry like Duke or North Carolina or Kentucky, Louisville on TV, and it doesn't put it in perspective until you're out there, or at least until you're in the stands for an environment like that. You get an entirely different appreciation, entirely different perspective. You know, I kind of joke with Cal a little bit about the fact that, you know, coaches have a tendency to not look ahead in the schedule, or at least preach about not looking ahead in the schedule. But you'll notice that he'll implement little things defensively or so 3 or 4 weeks in advance of that Louisville game without mentioning why he's doing it until 3 or 4 days before the Louisville game. And we start scouting what their offense looks like. And we're like, oh, that's why we're going under screens on this. And that's why we're doing this in this particular situation. And those are things that you kind of learn as you go through it, and you develop a real appreciation, like this game means something. And it's more than just a win or a loss in that column. It really does run deep. You know, I remember pretty much every play from all three Louisville games that we had. And it's just, it's, you know, you grow up, you remember them, you remember all of them, and you grow up just, you want that so bad. So it's a different, it's a learned, perspective, to say the least. But I specifically remember that Julius Randle moment. I remember a Nerlens moment, because that 2013 year we were on the road, it was one of the first games in the Yum Center. And they played, Rihanna's Who's Gonna Run This Town Tonight right before tip off. And it was like, I still don't have my full hearing back from that game. It was, you know, it was one of those moments that sticks with you. So that's what makes playing for a school like this so much fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you talked about Cal wanting you to, you know, piss Poitras off, and you know, you bulked up to 212. So, I mean, honestly, you could have just bullied your dad. I mean, if that.
Yeah. He stopped. We haven't played since I was 14. Let's put it that way.
This past season, man, worst season since the 1920s. You had to go deep in the record books to find comparisons to, you know, what we saw on the court. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were frustrated with Cal. You know, Dante Allen should have been playing. We can't shoot, and we got a, you know, a sniper on the bench. Why isn't he playing? A lot of people I think a lot of people were thinking Cal should come in these post-game press conferences and be just as pissed off as we were when we were watching the game. If we're throwing a remote or kicking the couch, Cal should come out and just be just pissed off. I think that's the way the fan base wanted it to be. Now the season's over. We heard him at his last call-in show, you know, have your fun now, but we're going to be back. And then you see him putting the pieces together for this roster, and you see weaknesses getting addressed. And by his actions, he's a competitive dude. He's a prideful guy. Now we see that, hey, this left just as bad a taste in his mouth as it did everybody else.
Yeah, so before I start this little segment here, admittedly, I intentionally stay away from looking too deep into recruiting. One of my best friends in the world is Evan Daniels. I actually just got off the phone with him right before we started this podcast. He did evandaniels.com, scouting, scout.com. He's essentially the guy that ranks the players when it comes down to it. He's the one that puts, you know, if we get the number one point guard in the country, he had a lot to do with the fact that he was ranked there. He's recently transitioned into another role with CAA as an agent for coaches. But for the most part, he's my guy when it comes to, breaking down a certain player's skill set. I've intentionally kind of stayed out of that arena, when it comes to the recruiting process, because I'd rather see what they can do when they get here. I don't have as much of an eye for that as he does when it comes to analyzing a younger player. You know, some guys can just see talent and know how that can be developed and coached by the right team of guys, the right, you know, unit of coaches, to get the most out of their potential. Evan's one of those guys. So credit to him for what he does. He does a great job with that. I intentionally stay away from looking at it until they're here. So I have a very new and fresh perspective on this roster. With that being said, I know what the staff was after, trying to go, you know, with a spread offense. We want to go four or five wide. Will he actually stick with that? We'll see. Does he ever stick with the zone that he's, that we implement at the beginning of the year? Not very often. But he is an adaptive coach. I think he's gotten to the point. I had a conversation with Cal this year, you know, somewhere mid conference season, somewhere around February, where we lost a pretty pivotal game. And, I just happened to run into him at a restaurant, and he asked me, he said, "What do you see?" And, you know, it was more of a, you know, I appreciate him asking my advice, but he wasn't looking for my advice. You know, he just wanted to, he wanted to talk about it. And, you know, most everybody that he talks to about it has, you know, it's media or it's his players or his guys that are, you know, that are going to have a combative battle. And, he's an adaptive coach. He sees the gaps that we needed to fix. I promise you, you say you want him to come out to the press conference and, like you said, throw a remote and stuff. It hits him harder than any fan. It hits the players harder than any fan. They just have he knows it's not going to solve anything. Yeah. He's got to figure out the best way to go back to the drawing board and fix those gaps in the offense, fix those scoring lulls where we can't seem to get anything that looks good at the basket, right? We got to be able to hit free throws. We got to stop having lapses on defense and getting backdoored. And the problem with coaching a young team, especially when you're in the thick of it, of the season, is that if you take time during practice to focus on a specific thing and don't pay attention to some of the other stuff that they've been doing well and give them credit for what they've been doing well and continue to build on that, then you can, you know, lose sight of the forest for the trees. So he's trying to do the best he can. I promise you it bothers him more than anybody watching at home. And he's a Hall of Fame coach for a reason. He will fix what he saw was an issue this year. You know, he'll do his best to build a cohesive unit that fills the gaps that were prominent in our effectiveness to close out games. I would imagine that he's going to take a real deep dive into the offense that caused us to stall out, you know, when between that 7 and 2 to 3 minute mark left in the second half, where we went in significant scoring lulls and allowed guys to crawl back in or extend leads. Those are things he's good at. He gets a lot of attention for his lack of X's and O's. But it's what people fail to realize. Everybody's an armchair quarterback. That's what everybody praised him for when John Wall and DeMarcus and those guys were here, that he was able to coach them on how to be basketball players and adapt on their own in a situation rather than call play 2, 3, 4, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And they just go out and do it. So, you know, it's a double-edged sword. Sometimes you just need players to make plays. There were times this year where the players that we thought were capable of doing that fell short. Sometimes it's because they're young. Sometimes it's because they didn't, you know, put the work in that other guys in the past we've seen put in. And a lot of that, you know, Cal will take on his shoulders. So I think we'll see a significant change in his approach to this season, because he's not going to have a repeat of what happened last year.
For sure. For sure. And you talk about, like, I'm with you as far as, you know, recruits and waiting to see what happens when they get here. Like you said, Evan Daniels, you know, Justin Rowland, those types of guys, mm-hmm. that follow the journey, follow the process, this visit, that visit, open up recruitment, decommit, all that. I'm with you. So as far as, you know, Ty and Damian Collins and mm-hmm. and the new guys, you know, I'm with you. See what they do when they get here. As far as the transfer, the CJ Frederick, Sevier Wheeler, Kellen Grady, guys that have been around and bring experience, what do you think as far as those guys are concerned? You've seen some guys who have actual college years under their belts.
Yeah, I'm absolutely impressed with specifically Wheeler. I think he's going to be a great him being able to step in and run a team. We haven't had an experienced point guard able to do that. We saw a little bit of it from Davion, but Wheeler's just a little bit more of a floor general, I think. I want to get in there and see some workouts. In the next couple of weeks, COVID made that nearly impossible last year. I didn't get to see anything prior to the season and very little during. So I'd like to get in there and see how these guys gel together. But I'll tell you this, the transfers will come in with the work ethic to get those other guys to elevate. Like a lot of freshmen, they might be incredibly talented and they might have a great appreciation for the game, but a lot of them have never really had to get down in a stance and guard somebody for 40 minutes. They've never had to. They've been able to take possessions off. They've been able to score at will on two, maybe even three guys in high school and AAU. That can't happen in the SEC. It can't happen at the highest level, Division I. You're getting everybody's best shot. Everybody hates to hear that, but you're getting everybody's best shot. And you're not always going to get the calls, especially on the road. They have to learn that you can't take a possession off, that when you miss a shot, you can't hang your head. You got to get back on defense. And these transfers have learned that. And I think that they'll be able to step in and kind of implement that work ethic early on. That's one huge advantage that the 2015 team had going into my senior season is we had a lot of those guys decide to forego the NBA draft and come back for their second year. And we were able to kind of set that dynamic and that tone early in practice. We had, Andrew and Tyler competing for the point guard spot. We had Aaron and Devin competing for the shooting guard spot. We had Alex and Willie going against the freshmen in the paint, Carl and Trey. All these guys competing, against, quite frankly, the best competition in the country in our own practice gym. And it created that tenacity and that ferociousness to not take a possession off, go after every ball because we were literally having harder practices than most of the games that we were playing. I think that the transfers that have been in those battles in the SEC will come in and raise that level of competition in practice and in workouts. And I think we'll see a significant change jumping on teams early in the season, early in the games, and not letting off the gas.
So, inside the NCAA tweeted earlier today that a waiver was granted to allow basketball instruction by non-coaching staff members this summer. So, a guy like Bruiser Flint, who was in a non-basketball role now, can still come in and give instruction. And we know how important it is for the summer and the bonding and all that. How crucial is that to get another coach in there during the summer for
So
instruction?
I think it's huge for one main reason. The obvious reasons, of course, but one main reason, and that's because a lot of the scheduling for recruiting visits in the past has had to be centered around who can be there to manage workouts. If Cal's off recruiting, or when we had Coach O here and Rod Strickland here at the same time, those two guys were incredible recruiters. But you also wanted Coach O here with KP working on the with the big guys. We wanted, Rod here doing all the guard drills with Coach Robic. And so it made it difficult that if they were the ones that were being counted on to recruit, that they weren't here to give that expertise in practice. So this, adds that dynamic. We're able to be able to send some guys off to recruit, but still have capable coaches here to educate and raise the level of competition in practice and workouts this summer. And that goes a long, long way. I mean, if you're, Andrew Harrison, who Rod Strickland recruited here to play point guard, and then in the summer workouts where you're trying to get that work in, he's having to, bounce back and forth across the country on recruiting trips. That creates, a scheduling issue with the staff. And, they want to be here. They want to be here to do their job. Their job is to coach basketball. Of course, recruiting is a part of that. But this just allows them to kind of create a more cohesive unit. And have guys here constantly on workout duty and getting guys better for this upcoming season. As much as recruiting is important for moving forward, being here and getting this team ready is the first priority.
Right.
And Bruiser's great, a great on-court coach.
And speaking
As
of,
is Chen. Sorry.
okay, you good. Talk about the staff. I want to get your thoughts on the staff. I mean, you were there when Coach O was here on his first stint, and now he's back for another go round. Talk about that staff dynamic. We saw Justice go to Arizona State. Barbie gets a Central Michigan job. So it's a revamped staff, a lot of transfers coming in, revamped roster. After 9-16, you know stuff got to be done. So talk about the new additions to the staff and how you think they're all going to fit.
So, first off, Joel Justice was a GA when I was a senior, or junior and a senior, I guess. Love Joel. I think he's an incredible, capable coach. I think he'll do a great job at Arizona State. I would have loved to have seen him stick here. But coaching is about growing, learning different systems. If you stay, there's something to be said about somebody like John Shire who knows Coach K's system, is able to step in and take that role as Coach K departs. But he's all, you also need to know the dynamic of the way other coaches play, the way other systems work. And I think Joel made the best move for him as a coach and moving forward, to get a little bit of a taste of something else too. Coach O was here, like you said, when I first here, he had Rod Strickland with him as well. Unbelievable, unbelievable person, unbelievable motivator, just brings the energy unlike anyone else ever did. I mean, our staff all around was great, but anybody that played under Coach O when he was here will tell you he was the guy in there loud, chomping gum, clapping, screaming, yelling, bringing the energy. And he's a big, big energy guy, big advocate for for just the positive energy. I mean, 6 in the morning workouts, everybody's dragging, wiping their eyes, and he's in there just, in everybody's face, getting everybody going, getting the blood flowing. Unbelievable guy, unbelievable coach. Very happy to have him back. So that was a good shift for those two guys. I don't know Chin well, but I'll tell you this. I talked to Coach O about him. He signs off on him. I've heard from Evan and plenty of other guys that have worked with him that he's a lifelong basketball guy, and he just loves the game. And that says a lot. That goes a long way in that gym, because there's a lot of hours being put in that practice facility. So, from what I've heard about him, he's fantastic. And we know how good Barbie is. Barbie was at first coached against us when he was at Auburn, and then came onto the staff. So we had a little bit of a relationship with him. Obviously played under Cal, probably a good move for him as well. So it's just it's we got a little bit of some fresh faces, both on the staff and on the roster. But it's still Cal's system that he's gonna bring in the guys that he knows can be an extension of him, on that sideline and in that practice facility. And hold the players that he brings into the highest standard. And both Chin and Coach O are fantastic recruiters. And Robes is still there and fantastic with the back end stuff. He doesn't get enough credit for what he's done with Cal's programs. So they just have all the pieces to put it together. And I'm curious what order that will fall in. In years past, he's done things pretty consistently. But if we're gonna go ahead and decide we're gonna play a 4 or 5 out system, the early stages of this summer will be, extremely influential with how this season goes. So, I'm excited for them to get in there and get to work.
And we'll all get to see it. Well, exhibition games, of course, but November the 9th, we're first up on the Coach K farewell tour when he's getting rocking chairs and cigars and all this stuff. We're going to hear it all year long. And only fitting that we be the first ones to dive into his farewell storyline.
Oh yeah, I love it. I love it. I've played against him several times, or I guess maybe twice, I think. But that Wisconsin loss robbed the world in 2015 of what would have been an unbelievable showdown, or two of the best teams and two of the best coaches really in the history of the game. Because we would have had Duke in the national championship game that year. So, but otherwise, I don't know how I managed to circle back to the most devastating day in Big Blue Nation, but
Wasn't me. I didn't ask nothing about
yeah,
that.
you didn't. I did it on my own. But yeah, Coach K is an incredible coach. He's done a ton for the game at all levels. Even with the USA teams, coached several guys, that's been under Cal. So yeah, he deserves all the farewell tour have at it. He's been an unbelievable asset to the game.
Should Shire call Coach Joe B. Hall? I mean, he's following K. Joe B. followed Rupp. Maybe he needs to give Joe B. a call. Just to, how do we do this, man?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one. He's got some big shoes to fill, but he's also a very capable coach. He's like I said, he knows K's system, you know, probably better than anybody. He's also an unbelievable person. And I think he'll do an absolutely fine job. They won't miss much of a beat.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, Booker and the guys in NBA, all the guys you play with. We got Cat on Cat, you know, crime. AD is trying to give it a go tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Lakers on the brink of elimination. Mm-hmm. The Suns should be smelling blood. How do you think that plays out?
I actually have a good friend downstairs ready to watch that game with me, probably decked out in purple and gold. I was Book's workout partner. I, without patting myself too much on the back, think I was pretty early on in seeing his potential. He is the most focused, positively arrogant person when it comes to his capabilities. He wants perfection. He's the closest I've seen to Kobe when it comes to footwork and when it comes to dedication to learning a move, when it comes to, when we would be doing shooting workouts, if the ball hit the rim, it didn't count for him. Mm. He just held himself to a different standard. And he would work, you know, he would spend practices working solely on implementing a new move before he would ever try it in a game. He's just got that level of focus. I think the Suns close him out. I think a lot of that will depend on how functional AD is. You know, I never want to see a team lose a game. I want to see a team win a game. Mm-hmm. And by that I mean I don't want to see the Lakers get beat because AD can't play. I want to see the Suns win because Devin hits a big shot, you know. I hate, you know, the most heartbreaking thing in sports for me is when somebody has a, you know, a field goal and misses it and they lose because he didn't, you know, put it through the uprights. I'd rather see somebody hit a 55-yard field goal to win. Mm-hmm. So with that same thought, you know, I hope Chris Paul can play. I hope AD can play. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul's playing. If they have to chop his arm off, he's going to play. Mm-hmm. So I hope that they both go out there and battle it out. I think the Suns have the edge. I think, like you said, there's blood in the water. And they're a very, very capable and dangerous team when they're clicking on all cylinders. AD's going to have to come in here it's at Staples, right? I think he's going to have to come into Staples and be solid. Even if he's hurt, he's going to have to be solid. And LeBron's going to have to show out. If they're you got a lot of people saying LeBron's the GOAT over Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan wouldn't lose this game. So let's see what happens.
You're right. Now, Charles Barkley the other night hit AD with street clothes.
Oh, yeah.
Street clothes.
So he did. He hadn't made a guarantee for this, has he?
I hadn't seen yet.
I don't think he's made a guarantee. Well, I might have to turn on TNT pregame, make sure he doesn't guarantee a win for the Suns. That's not good if he does that.
So it's we, of course, look at AD from our perspective. You mm-hmm. know, Oscar Combs said he was the best player ever. Put him above Dan Issel for the year he had at Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, he's missed some games out there. He's had some seasons where he hasn't played a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, they're just seeing what they're getting now. You mm-hmm. know, it's you know, you want to chuckle, oh, street clothes. Oh, Chuck going to call him street clothes. But
I don't, you know, this game is about longevity. Cool. He's, you know, I can see it was a different era. You know, it was a different era back then and they didn't take games off and there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, I lean more towards the fact that I feel like I'd be playing no matter what the pain was like. Mm-hmm. I would be overruling the doctors in this situation. If they were to say you're not capable of playing, I'd say somebody's going to have to, you know, strap me to a chair in the locker room then, because I'm going out there. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know the extent of his injury. I don't know how much pain there is. I don't know if he's capable of playing. But if he is, I'd expect him to be out there. He's too much of a competitor. You know, we've seen that. He wants to win. I promise you, just like we talked about Cal in the press conference and throwing the remote, AD wants to be out there and win more than any Laker fan wants him to be out there and win.
Right.
And if he can do it, he will. Yeah. But with that said, you better play. I mean, he better play, because to sit there with, you know, with this much on the line, coming off of a title, world title the year prior, with the potential that this team has after missing as many games as they have and causing some, you know, cohesive issues within the team. And I don't mean, you know, button heads. I mean, like they haven't gotten they haven't been able to get the flow back because they haven't both been out there together much. Yeah. He really needs to play in order for them to win this. And if he doesn't, I'll even go so far as to say, if he doesn't, that's more blood in the water for the Suns. You know, they're going to come out ready to go. So I would expect him to give it a shot. I would expect him to play well. But they're going to need a lot out of both of those two guys, because the Suns are a force to be reckoned with, and every guy on that floor can shoot the ball for them. Mm-hmm. And you know, we know how dynamic Devin is. We know that two guys aren't going to stop him. So with his ability to spread the floor, when they send two guys at him at 30 feet, it makes it pretty easy for the Suns to get a good look. So, you know, the Lakers are going to have to come ready to go.
I just kind of hope, because when you start getting that injury prone tag, that, you know, you can't count that he stays hurt. I just, it sticks, and it's kind of hard to,
yeah,
hard to pull it off.
It is.
That's kind of where he's getting. Like, I don't know how hard, you know, it's not my groin, it's his groin. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, people kind of sticking that on you and starting to hit you with that. And I just,
well, there's, you know, I got a little off topic on my tangent there, but there's injuries that are nagging. If you got, you know, like Chris Paul's shoulder injury, if you've got, you know, a groin or a back or a neck problem, like Luka's got a neck issue going on, that's causing problems, you know, all the way up and down, arms, mm-hmm. legs, everything. You can't, you know, run or move, or you're not as doesn't have the agility that you're used to. So his groin issue is no doubt a significant, you know, it's pulling him back on the reins a lot.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not as simple as a twisted ankle, tape it up and bite your teeth, you know, bite your teeth and go.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel for him, because it's tough that he's getting that label. And I have no doubt that he's hurt. And like I said, I hope that he can suit up. I hope that he can play through it. It's a lot to ask. But he's got, you know, and it's a long season, and it was a short turnaround. I mean, they were beat up pretty good. And they had the longest season of any team last year, obviously, going all the way to, you know, I think it was, what, six games in the finals. So they played up until, when was that? I don't even remember. Late in the summer. And then turn around and go right back. And they still had a 72-game season, and now the playoffs. So it's hard on your body. Basketball is a contact sport. He's asked to play a lot of minutes. He gets compensated pretty well for it. But that doesn't make it any easier for your body to recover fast. You got a groin injury, you got a Chris Paul shoulder injury. Those things don't heal in 48 hours, no matter how much ice or treatment you get. So he's going to be feeling it. And like you said, it sucks that he's got that label, or getting a little bit of that label. But you know, you step up and do your part, do the best you can. That's all you can ask for. But I hope he can. I hope he can go. I hope he can give it a go.
Absolutely. A couple more quick things so we can get down here and watch these games, man.
Absolutely.
When all you guys are back together, Big Blue Madness or various different events, you know, you guys from your era, guys from, you know, that played before you, that played after you, who are your favorite guys from the older era to talk to? I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
No, you're good.
Favorite guys that have come after you to just talk to, kick it with, you know, laugh, joke, cut up with? Who kind of stands out to you from the old guard and then the guys that's come after you since you played?
So prior to me, I've had a relationship with a lot of the guys that were around from dad's era. You know, Goose Givens is a good friend of his that I've been around plenty. Sam Bowie, you know, plenty of the guys in his generation. A guy that kind of split the middle with us was Rex Chapman. Rex has always been great to me. We had a bit of a funny start to our relationship. He DM'd me one time on Twitter and I read it and was like doing something else and forgot to answer him. And we had a event we had to do together a couple weeks later. And he called me out on stage on the microphone for leaving him on red. He was like, I got left on red by Todd Lanner. And, we just kind of hit off a pretty good dynamic from there. He's a great guy. He's, you know, shared a lot of his life experiences, you know, learned a lot of lessons with basketball and everything since, been very open and transparent about a lot of the things that you deal with in life and in basketball and in sports and family and business and everything else. I have a lot of respect for him. He's been great to me, but just talking about the younger guys, I haven't been around as many of them because we've only had like, I think, so if I got, I guess the last guys that I dealt with graduated in 2018. But I never played with like Isaiah Briscoe. Isaiah and I were both in Derek Willis and Keeley's wedding. Okay. So I got to experience some stuff with him. And I had just started doing ESPN radio the year that he was there. And I talked a lot about him, some good things and some bad things. So, I got to, you know, cut it up with him and get his perspective on some stuff. So it's the mutual respect, having been through, a lot of those things together, so a lot of similar experiences together, even, you know, as far back as dad's era all the way through now, a lot of those things don't change. The one thing that's the biggest difference maker that the players are challenged with today, it's both beneficial for their ability to market themselves, you know, as far as building a fan base, and market themselves for life after basketball, but is also a huge burden when it comes to obvious reasons is social media. That's something that past generations haven't had to deal with. And we were kind of on the cusp between 2012 and 2015, where Instagram started to be big, Snapchat started to be big. And you're still college kids. You still do stupid stuff. And now everybody can find out about it at the drop of a hat. Mm-hmm. So that perspective alone has caused a lot of these guys to have to grow up a lot faster. And, you know, be conscious of those things. It's, you know, a very prominent daily thing that we, you know, a lot of us use it. You and I know specifically use it to get a lot of our news. But it's something that you kind of take for granted when you're not in the spotlight. So it's a big challenge for guys these days, and the generations coming in to use that to their advantage, and kind of be above reproach when it comes to that. So that's just kind of a little different perspective on generational situations. And we have a 3-pointer now, which which I love to joke about because dad's jealous of that one.
I bet, yeah, for sure. You mentioned ESPN Radio. So it's 1300 AM, 92.5 FM in Lexington. Pre-game, post-game show. So this coming season, what time, how long before tip-off do we need to tune in and check you out and tell us about the show and tales, man?
Yeah, so we start an hour before tip-off. We go all the way up right till the tip, and then throw it over to the guys in the arena. And then we start immediately after the buzzer, final buzzer sounds, and go for usually between 40 and 45 minutes, depending on how long the game ran, usually rounded off to the hour or something. It's been a blast. This will be my fourth year, I believe, doing it, co-hosting with Matthew Lawrence. They've been, you know, they've done great. They taught me the ropes. I've done several, you know, spots on radio shows in the past and commercials. And, I did some things with Matt Jones with, you know, bracket predictions and breakdowns and things like that, on camera. The one thing I've learned, which I talked to you on the phone about before this interview, was live shows. I much prefer doing live, because people expect you to and cough and sneeze and lose track of your thoughts and, you know, gather your thoughts and stumble a little bit. It's human. And, you know, when you do a lot of recorded stuff, they expect you to be perfect. It kind of, it's a lot more challenging to read off a script for me than it is to just kind of come off the cuff and say what I'm thinking. I think it's a lot more genuine. You get a lot more true response. So that's been fun for me when it comes to the radio and the ability to interact with the fan base and the callers. We'll be doing a lot of satellite shows this year now that COVID's up, where we can get back into restaurants or bars and do the pregame show there from on site. So I'll be able to do, you know, interviews from people that are sitting there with us, bring them up and talk to them. You know, bring in some of my past guys that are around that we can get in for games to do some bits with them. And it's been a lot of fun. So yeah, an hour before tip off and roughly 45 minutes following the last buzzer.
Good stuff. And speaking of, you mentioned Matt Jones, definitely glad to hear where he said he was kind of doing better with the blood pressure scare and all that. He talked about it today. So that's good that he's kind of getting through the worst of what he's going through health wise.
Absolutely. I had an event with him last weekend. He was, you know, he was doing okay. So, but that was before the hospital thing. So, prayers to him and his family that he's able to overcome it. But now that he's out of the hospital, I think things are looking up. So, yeah, you know, good for him.
For sure.
He does a great job for us and has always been a consummate professional.
Yeah. And you also mentioned ESPN Radio. Man, say hi to my dude, Angelo Guerriero.
Yeah, that's my guy. Love Angelo. He's the one that makes the gears turn, man. He keeps everything rolling, keeps me on track. When I get long-winded like I've done on here, when I too many times, he'll write on a piece of paper, hold it up and shove it in my face. And I'm like, all right, man, I got it. But he's great.
Yeah. And man, here, I got to ask you this one too. Being from Lexington, Kentucky native, if name, image, likeness was a thing when you were playing, what's the first place or places of business you would have gone to get, you know, some endorsements going for yourself?
I was obviously a little bit of a unique perspective because I'm not going to be getting much of the cash flow that some of those guys might have been able to pull off. But I would have done, you know, some local places to try to build their brands, like Kentucky Branded, you know, local places that have always been near and dear to my heart as a fan growing up, that you'd shop in. You know, you get gifts and things from those types of places, and you always wonder in them when you pass by. And I've done some work with them in the past, and they've always been fantastic. So I'd love to build some of those things, build some of those relationships. Possibly a car. That would have been nice. Go to a dealership, see what you can work out with those guys. but you know, we had a close call in 2014, I think, when they were voting on whether they were going to allow that to happen for the 2015 season. I actually don't even remember what prevented it from going through, but they almost approved players being able to be somewhat compensated for their likeness before that season, which would have been pretty fantastic considering the year we ended up having. Yeah. But that's always a sticky subject. I mean, I think there's a lot of exploitation that goes on with those athletes, considering the money they're making the universities at every school, obviously. And you know, specifically tournaments and things like that. There needs to be something worked out, but obviously the amateur status is ever changing. It's a constant battle with what's right and, you know, what's exploiting and taking advantage. And, you know, thankfully I don't have to make that decision, but I think there's some type of compensation opportunities that should be made available for sure.
That's it. And you kind of downplayed it. I think you would have still done well in Lexington and Kentucky kid on the team. You would have struck out some deals, man.
I appreciate that. I did. We did a signing tour after my senior year. We got, you know, here's one right here on the wall. We got some opportunities to do some things. So that was pretty cool.
Cool.
But that was postseason. So that was after we graduated. So it was a little different, but would have been nice to have been doing a you know, championship tour after that rather than a Final Four runner up, but
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And for everybody on Twitter, man, we mentioned it earlier, y'all follow Todd at Todd_Lantern3. And you check his profile pic out there. I mean, like you're at the Derby or something. You're looking dapper.
It was at the Derby. On.
And you topped off that look with an awesome timepiece. And as you know, we all, you know, familiar with Dave and Ben at La Terraine. You are part of the La Terraine family. They sponsor this podcast. Any kind of watch you want the Compass, you want the Voyager, you want any kind of look, any kind of band. If you go to the site, laterraine.com, if it's something sold out, that just means everybody's got the same sense of style as you. Keep coming back. And when it's in stock, get the watch that you want. But those guys do great stuff. Dave is a new dad, so congratulations to him again for that.
Absolutely.
But those guys are doing an awesome job getting out fire time pieces. You know, the 96 team had that 25th anniversary competitive edition. Mm-hmm. That thing was hot.
But absolutely.
Man, they got you covered at La Terraine, man.
Absolutely. They've done an incredible job to me with me. They reached out a couple months ago and we started working together. I wear my Legacy 2 black with black on black band is my daily go-to. I have my Apple Watch on right now because I just came from the gym. I didn't want to wear the leather band at the gym, but the Legacy 2 is my go-to. I need to go ahead and order a couple more bands, do the brown band for a wedding I have coming up that I might need to have the brown match it with. Not my wedding, but a wedding coming up I got to go to. So I need to get with them and go ahead and get the brown band. They got the interchangeables. So it's awesome. They've been great to me. And again, congrats to Dave on the new fatherhood.
Yeah, for sure. Well, man, Todd, this has been a blast. Cool getting to meet you and chop it up with you. Talk about looking forward to this coming season, doing some NBA playoffs, all kind of fun stuff we got in on this episode of Believe in Kentucky. Y'all follow Believe in Kentucky on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. This episode will be up later on and listen to it, tell your friends about it, rate, review, subscribe and all that good stuff. And we'll keep cranking out good content as best as we can. Todd, man, we're looking forward to the pregame, postgame. I'm definitely going to be checking you out when the season gets here, man. First game against Duke. We'll be here before we know it.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for including me. Obviously, I'll share the podcast and everything else, but let me do what I can to get back on after I've been into some workouts and got a little more insight on this year's team.
Oh, for sure. For sure, absolutely, man. We're definitely looking forward to that. And y'all check us out when Todd comes back on. It's been another episode of Believe in Kentucky presented by Bet Online. We'll see y'all next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.